Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We played squash. I had never played before. And, you know,
was a good
great
squash
workout.
Player.
Oh, my God. My legs and butt are real. I mean, like, it's hard on your. It was really fun.
Did you do a backhand serve?
I didn't.
Just kiss the back wall.
I didn't know how to play prior to 9 o'clock yesterday morning.
And but now, basically,
I need to talk to you after the show. I'm leaving on the squash tour, which will delight a number of people who listen to the show.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty, then. We are live at Chatter, where we are open for breakfast. We have a small but dedicated crowd today.
Very passionate crowd.
We are grateful for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Not only do we have terrible rain constantly, it is like honestly living in the Brazilian rainforest.
It's just awful.
In Washington, D.C., and will continue to be this way for a week, and we will get to that in the news about Hurricane Florence. But it is 9/11, and I think that is a somber and sober day, and I think people do not journey necessarily out. We will get to the 9/11 remembrances later in the show as well. Liz Clark is here. David Aldridge is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel will do the news and run the board. For those of you who want to come out tomorrow when you get this podcast today, remember that we are at the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer Streets in Friendship Heights. We are Chatter. And please come for football. Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, please come for football because we have a lot of football drink and eat specials. Let me get to the Monday night games. I remember the Monday night games. I remember doing the early game. I didn't like to do the late game.
No.
You know, the late game involved a lot of travel.
Did you do the late game?
And I never do. Oh, one of the years we had
did
a late
you?
Game.
West
yeah.
Coast
one of
game?
The years, yeah. One of, I didn't do it. I mean, I did the East Coast games. It was easier to do that. The East Coast game was in Detroit, the westernmost part of the Eastern time zone, with a Pro Bowl quarterback, Matthew Stafford, who stunk.
He was awful.
Yeah.
Four picks. Yeah. Now, if you didn't watch, let me tell you, the really exciting moment was Sam Darnold quarterbacking the Jets, the new savior for the Jets. The Jets, and we don't, unless you're watching News Channel 8, you cannot see what I'm doing. The Jets have one highlight in history. This is it.
Yeah.
It's Joe Namath's right index finger.
Right.
That's one highlight in 65 years. That's all there is. There is nothing else. That's it.
Yeah.
So Sam Darnold, all new quarterbacks come with a lot of hope for the New York Jets. Sam Darnold became the youngest starter ever.
Wow.
In an NFL game at quarterback to open the season, the youngest guy ever. And his first pass went
Pick
the
six.
Other way. Pick six. Now, that is that is soul-crushing.
Yeah. Yes.
That is, if you are not any good, you're never going to be any good. So some of us couldn't wait for what happens next. He was 16 of his next 20.
Yeah.
He was good.
Very good.
You know, I don't know what the percentage is of people that would have folded up. But I think it's higher than people that wouldn't have folded up under those circumstances.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And he was 16 of 20 after that. They put 48 on Matt Patricia, who was what last year for the Patriots?
Defensive coordinator.
A defensive guy.
Yes.
They put 48 on this guy.
It's a Romeo Crennel situation.
It was.
Right, yes.
Romeo Crennel.
Yes.
Well, you know, you look at the history of people that leave there to become head coaches. It's Charlie Weiss, mm-hmm. Josh McDaniels, Eric Mangini.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No.
It's not good. So the Jets scored on defense for the first time in like 10 years. They scored on a punt return.
Right.
The Jets dominated, and Detroit. Detroit has, I think, David, I think I'm fair in saying this, I think they have the worst history of any original NFL team in the Super Bowl era.
All right.
They've never been.
This is how bad.
Now, Cleveland's never been, but they've never been.
This is how bad Detroit's history is. I covered their last playoff win. It was 1991, I think. Eric Hipple was the quarterback.
Oh, good.
They're
that's a while ago.
Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that was the year, of course, that the Redskins won the Super
That's
Bowl,
right.
and they
That's
beat
right.
Detroit first
That's
game
right.
and then on the way
That's
in
right.
the playoffs. But they have a terrible history. People go there. you know, like Wilbon is always talking about how sad it is for the Bears. They've won Super Bowls. Shut up. They've won Super Bowls.
Been in the playoffs a lot.
Detroit never, and people walked. They walked at the end of that game.
They were
terrible. And it was, they looked bad.
Yeah, it's just awful.
Really, really bad. The second game was the, now I didn't, I'm not going to lie, I didn't stay up for the second game at all. That was the LA Rams against the Oakland Raiders
still. The Oakland Raiders,
soon to be Vegas Raiders.
Right.
Now, one of the reasons I guess ESPN opened with that, it's John Gruden. I would assume he's your boy and you're going to open with him. Sean McVay's your boy. Liz, you covered Sean McVay for years.
Oh, yeah.
With the Redskins.
Yes.
This is, look, you can't go just on one game, but last year he turned around a terrible franchise that was coached by a defensive guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When Jared Goff was drafted by Jeff Fisher basically said, this guy can't play.
Right.
Go get me some coffee.
Right. Yeah.
Sean McVay went in there and said, this guy will play, and they were the biggest, well, them and the Eagles were the biggest turnarounds, right, last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sean McVay then went out and took a chance and brought in three or four defensive guys with a bad personal history, but a good, you know, a personal competence issue. They just ruin it for everybody else.
Right.
They're hard to discipline. Took a real chance, gave them to Wade Phillips. And if this is sustainable, Sean McVay is 35 years old, if he's 35.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you make of him when you covered him? They killed the Raiders last night. They killed them.
I mean, he was so unassuming when I covered him, I think anybody would tell you, at least dealing with reporters. And it was very hard to parse out what part of the offense is Jay Gruden, what part is Sean, because he was like a mini-me, you know, very deferential,
right?
A total team guy. But I think, you know, the more we watch, the more we talk to quarterbacks, all you know, both of them, starter, backup, the confidence, the respect they had for Sean McVay. I mean, you realize this guy looks like he could be a water boy. He looks like somebody's son,
He's 33 years old,
the
right?
Equipment.
32.
No,
32.
I mean, it's like at your peril, you know, overlook him or discount him.
And now, he comes from lineage.
He's definitely.
His dad was a coach in the league.
And granddad, I think, as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, I mean, I'm thinking of a couple things. One of the things I really respect about what he's doing now is the way he built his staff from the jump. You know, unlike a lot of NFL coaches, is not threatened by hiring really good coaches. You know, the defensive coordinator. That was a big move.
Wade Phillips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To
40
to go
years
with
older
experience.
Than this guy.
And also, you know, just think in terms of who's going to reach your locker room, who's going to command respect. And it doesn't seem to have a need to be the me guy. Just intelligently assemble his staff. And I think, you know, it won't take much longer until he goes on the list of either, you know, players or coaches with potentials that the Redskins kind of let go.
Well, Sean McVay at the moment, after 17 games as a head coach, is the reason why no one will ever hire Jeff Fisher again as a head coach.
Yeah.
Yes. that's also true.
But this is an amazing turnaround with
the same, more or less.
And players that people thought, particularly on offense, were nothing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You watch this and you go, wow, this is a wow. He went he went on the road. That's a tough place to win, right?
Yep.
Oakland's a tough place.
And if I could blurt out one other thing that just is anybody would say is the overwhelming thing about Sean McVay is how meticulous and studious he is about preparing and scripting and getting himself ready. It's really stunning to the point that it stands out in a profession of sort of anal over preparing people. I mean, he really is off the charts. And but has an ability to relate to people. He's not just like some wonky freak, you know, staying up all night doing his little planning. He's very affable. And
I mean, it's an
interesting
stunner.
Combo.
The Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Eagles, when you draft Carson Wentz and he shows pretty good right away, and you got a history of winning, the Philadelphia Eagles, you go, whoa, that's interesting. But it's not a stunner like the LA Rams is a stunner.
Yes.
They move out there from St. Louis in their first year. They hire a child.
Yes.
And now it looks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last year was no.
They're good.
It looks something like them. Yeah. All right. We don't have this in Washington because our baseball team doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yesterday, they actually in Philadelphia took blow torches onto the field to try to dry the base paths.
Like it was Lambo.
So they could play, and they couldn't play. No. They're allegedly going to play two today. But there are wild card and division races that persist, even though the Nats have receded. In Wilbon land, yesterday was a bad day.
Yeah.
The Cubs, having lost two in a row to the Nats, lost again to Milwaukee. I just want to point this out. This guy, Josh Hader, who had the tweets?
Yeah.
Got in trouble around the All-Star game for the tweets.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right.
Josh Hader came in relief yesterday and ask yourself if this is something you would like if you were the manager. He came in relief. He faced six batters. He struck out six batters.
Is that good?
He struck out six batters.
I know that's good.
Yeah.
And Milwaukee won that game. I mean, there were races there. The Cardinals got a three-run homer from Matt Adams, who used to be here.
Yeah, he was good.
A lot of people
who used to be here
seem to be doing Gio Gonzalez, who we could not wait to get rid of, well. Blake Treinen last year hasn't given up a run all year.
Exactly. Right.
So the Nats,
I guess.
You
might want to ask yourself why this keeps happening with players who leave this organization, as we like to
say.
What
do you think?
I don't know, but it does seem odd, doesn't it, that the second they leave here, they start playing well.
That's a big
because
thing.
They are, I mean, to be fair, not Matt Adams or Daniel Murphy.
No, they were good.
But Blake Treinen was terrible.
Yeah.
And Gio Gonzalez was terrible.
For most of the year.
And they leave here, and there is rebirth. And I don't think of this as a good franchise.
I think it's a good franchise, but it's a franchise that maybe needs to look at and see why. There is you can't just keep saying it's baseball and it could go and it's a 50-50 game and the playoffs are a crapshoot. You can't just keep saying that every year.
Don't you get the
feeling? You only say that when you lose.
Yes.
Don't you get the feeling that right after the season, I think somebody mentioned this in the studio last week, that there's going to be a piece that comes out and says, oh, this clubhouse was completely fractured.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
Well, I read something yesterday.
Oh, Sports Illustrated
I read
just
something
came out
in Sports Illustrated yesterday, which...
Oh, I did not know that.
Which did not tell me anything I did not know, but paints... You read it. Paints a very bleak picture of tension in the organization.
Very tense. Tense was the exact right word.
Yeah.
It's very tense in there all the time. Well, all the time.
Expectations.
Yeah.
But they've delivered until October most of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But they haven't delivered. They have not delivered in October. And you see, boy, you do see people seem to bloom quickly somewhere else.
They produce. They've also brought in players who've come in and played well. I'm not saying it's like the worst run organ. It's not. It's a well run organization. But there is something that doesn't work that they have to figure out. Something doesn't go right in there, and I don't know if they are that self. If they're not reflective, where they would say maybe there's some things we need to change in here that aren't working. They just get real chesty and real, there's nothing wrong here. You're wrong for asking the question when that's brought up.
That's the tenor of the Sports Illustrated piece.
And that sounds exactly like it starts with Rizzo, because that's his response when he gets these questions in every interview.
Yeah.
But you can see with these players, it's like they can't get out of this town fast enough. And other visiting teams are aware of this too when they come in and play.
And yet, those of us who go to games occasionally think, what a lovely ballpark, what a nice thing, fun.
It's a young team that experienced success very quickly and did not understand the potential weight that also comes with that because of how hard it is to win in October. And when you look at the accumulation of 2012, 2016, and 2017 with those disastrous Game 5 losses, that cripples a clubhouse.
Yeah. All right, we will get out of here. Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports will join us. When we return, we'll talk about football. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
just no better ad for me than the Lowe's ad. My new go-to destination for Craftsman products. They have everything I need to help me tackle projects around my home, from mechanics, tool sets, to tool storage, and more, both in-store and online. Now, to be fair, what I need when I want to tackle a project is a telephone.
Yes.
So I can call somebody and pay him or her
to
fix what is wrong that I don't even understand.
It's broken.
Help me. One of the cool and different things you'll find in the Lowe's Craftsman lineup are mechanics tool sets in gunmetal finish. I know David's got those.
Oh, sure.
What's so great about that? Well, the gunmetal chrome finish is corrosion resistant, and that means the tools are more durable and long-lasting. And the best part, if you're a stickler about cleaning those tools, it makes them easier to clean.
There you go.
Now, Lowe's carries a 51-piece and an 81-piece mechanics tool sets in the gunmetal chrome finish. One of those is 51 more pieces than I need, and the other is 81 more pieces. The set comes with the new industry-leading Craftsman 100-tooth ratchet, which offers extreme accessibility. I know Liz uses that. So if one of your projects happens to be in a really tight space to get to, then you definitely need to check out the 120-tooth ratchet. Because it's got a 3-degree arc swing.
You know what that does?
I do some projects. Don't count me out.
Okay, so a 3-degree arc swing, as you well know, means you can loosen or tighten bolts with less movement in those hard-to-reach spots.
Sure. Yeah.
With its slim head and its 3-degree arc swing, you can get into narrow spaces with ease and quickly tighten or loosen any fastener. And at that point, I'm standing there saying, you got this, don't you? And the guy says, yeah, I do. And I say, okay, then I'm going to go. Lowe's and Craftsman are both deeply rooted in heritage and quality. Like their customers, these two brands have a shared passion for hands-on doing. Lowe's and Craftsman make it easy to tackle any auto or do-it-yourself project on your list. And we are partial to Craftsman here because at one point, if not now, they were owned by the Rails brothers, who started the radio station in this town that first employed me. Shop the new home of Craftsman today at Lowe's.com/Tony. That's Lowe's.com/Tony. Yep.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This song is sent to us by Jeff Becker, who writes, "Attached" is an original from my friend David Weaver, backed up by the local band The Kensingtones. He's written many originals. He wrote this recently for his daughter, who just went off to college. Jeff Becker says, "I play upright bass with the David Weaver Band, and I'm a SUNY Binghamton grad, class of 1976. We are joined by my fellow 76 grad, Walter Weinschenk. Jonathan Watkins on vocals and mandolin, Chris Cram on percussion, but this email is already too long, so skip this part. For what it's worth, we will be playing Barktoberfest on October 6th in Loudoun County. This is a benefit for abused and abandoned animals." Isn't that nice, Liz?
If you're
in the area, please stop by to support a good cause. Do we know the name of this song?
It's called Strength of Your Song.
Okay, because it's not written here in the email anywhere. All this plays in Jason Lockenfour of CBS, who I watched on Sunday on the pregame show. I am so grateful for football being back and giving me something to do on weekends and something to do on Monday and Thursday as well. And I've got a million questions, but I honestly don't know where to begin. I would say the most significant thing of the entire weekend in terms of being a viewer was Aaron Rodgers and Khalil Mack earning their money. And I just wondered how you felt about that and how that might shape the rest of the season, if at all.
Well, I think, you know, what we'll ultimately come to figure out here to determine is how big of a gamble did Aaron Rodgers make, how much has, you know, he and the Packers put any of the season at risk by coming back as he did. And I don't know that we'll ever know exactly what that answer is. And maybe no one, even the doctors themselves, can't tell you exactly, well, here's, you know, what further damage he did or what else he may have aggravated during that second half, you know, versus if they just started treatment and everything else right at halftime and yanked him out of the game. But certainly his head coach was not nearly as ready to proclaim Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback for next week as Aaron Rodgers was to proclaim himself the Packers quarterback for next week. And they face a menacing Vikings defense. So
yes,
you know, we're going to have to monitor that through the week and see what the swelling is like. And I can't imagine he practices much. And then they're going to have a decision to make this weekend. Khalil Mack, I mean, that's who he is. And you put him with a Vic Fangio defense with a few other pieces there that look like they're ready to step forward, or Roquan Smith in particular, and you have the makings of, I mean, they were top 10-ish the last couple years without anybody to rush the passer, you know, relying on, you know, guys sort of towards the end of their career, hoping Willie Young could come up with 8 or 9 sacks, stuff like that. I mean, this is a whole different ball game now. And when Fangio has this kind of singular pass rushing talent, the rest of the defense becomes all that much better. I mean, think Aldon Smith at the height of his powers before he crashed and burned with that Fangio defense under Harbaugh in San Francisco. It went from flimsy to formidable real quick.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, those two guys, I think for years to come, they'll be clashing. And not that there's necessarily an individual battle there, but Khalil Mack will see his share of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was reckless to play him in the second half. They won the game. It worked out. I wouldn't play him against Minnesota, which really has a good defense, although I'm on the record of saying DeShone Kizer is the worst quarterback I've ever seen, ever.
He's as bad as Hundley last year, though.
Yeah. Oh, he's worse.
Hundley replacing Rodgers, and they let that football atrocity go on for like 11 or 12 weeks.
But at least
I'll
when Hundley...
Kizer over Hundley.
No, when Hundley threw the ball, there was an attempt to throw it forward. Kizer throws it straight up in the air.
I don't know.
He's so terrible. All right. We'll move on from that. And I'm sure it'll give you great joy to know that Wilbon cannot get past the fact that he hates Nagy already.
Nothing.
And the Bears choked. And he took nothing out of that. I'm saying you should feel encouraged.
Well, yes.
You know.
I will say this. I am a staunch Mitch Trubisky skeptic. I think there's been a lot of dot connecting and a lot of projecting and a lot of hype. But everything I was hearing this summer was he ain't playing that much because we don't think it would go real well if he played a whole lot. And everything I heard was, let's go give a pass rusher quarterback money because we might never have to give this quarterback money. Yeah. And in the meantime, we better try to win 13-10 because even though we have all these pieces around him, his ability to get the ball 20, 30, 40 yards downfield, his ability to read the whole field, his ability to run an NFL offense, we'll see.
Okay. A lot of teams look terrible, and some of them were expected to look terrible. Some were not. But the team that looked terrible to me, particularly in the fourth quarter, were the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. Ben Roethlisberger looked inept in that particular game. Is this of great concern? Would that be a team that could slip and go right down the hole?
No, but going down the chute, but that to me was I didn't think the Steelers would cover, and I thought the Browns could win that game outright for a couple of reasons. You had all the Le'Veon Bell stuff going on.
Yep.
The Steelers always play down to the level of competition. Every year you'll look at them and say, wow, if they hadn't given these two games away, they would have been the one seed. But they always give two or three games away, and New England never gives two or three games away, and that's why the AFC Championship game is always in Foxborough and not in Pittsburgh. And you had the Browns with sort of some feel-good vibes, and the Browns' defense is legitimate, and then you add that weather into the equation. Mm-hmm. And, they turned them over 6 or 7 times.
Six times.
A couple of them.
Five by Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I think some of that was aided by the weather and just how slippery everything was. But in the fourth quarter, Ben looked to me like he didn't want to be out there. Like Ben looked like he'd rather be doing anything rather than have to keep standing there in the rain and have Myles Garrett keep blowing him up. The Browns are going to be okay. I mean, I think the Browns, even on a day when Tyrod Taylor was not good, and again, in those elements, I don't know how good anybody would be. But regardless, it's not a win, it's a tie, but I thought they'd be good for 5 or 6 wins.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, the Browns are better. The defense is no joke. They're going to be able to run the ball this year, and Tyrod won't turn it over. And
because
even on
he's not as bad as DeShone Kizer.
No. Look, DeShone Kizer I put on Hugh Jackson because they had no right playing that kid last year. They destroyed him. He wasn't ready. Everybody knew he wasn't ready, and they kept running him out there every week to try to justify the draft pick because they passed on 9,000 other quarterbacks who were good the last three drafts. So,
all right.
I mean, yeah, I could do a dissertation on that. But I'm not going to freak out about the Steelers just yet. But it is going to be a more difficult division this year. I still think they're the best team, and I still think – as good as Connor looked, he's not Le'Veon Bell. He's not going to catch 85 balls this year. And, whenever Le'Veon Bell comes back, week 4, week 6, week 8, week 10, they're a better team.
Let me get to the 5 quarterbacks that were involved in the roulette wheel. over the summer. And it starts, of course, with Kirk Cousins leaving Minnesota. So Case Keenum leaving for Minnesota. So Case Keenum has to leave Minnesota. And the Chiefs decide on Pat Mahomes. So Alex Smith has to leave Kansas City. And because Kirk Cousins shows up, every quarterback who ever played for Minnesota has to leave, including Sam Bradford. These quarterbacks were 4-1. Of these five quarterbacks, which one and for what reason stood out to you over the weekend?
Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, he can spin
he's
it.
He's the youngest. He's the strongest. He's the most athletic. He has the rifle arm. He's the one who's with Andy Reid. He's the one who was only making his second NFL start, his first opening day start. And that I know the Chargers, you know, their best corner's out for the year, and their best pass rusher, Joey Bosa, is out for at least a couple of weeks. And I know they weren't there, but that's still, to me, a pretty good team with a lot of talent. And they really couldn't stop him. And the amazing thing to me about that game was, you know, so he throws the four touchdowns, 250-odd yards, a lot of splash plays. Kelce did nothing. I mean, Kelce might be the best tight end in football. He did nothing.
Right.
Had like six receiving yards. He was just using the outside receivers and throwing to the backs a little bit. It wasn't even the full sort of multitude, the whole depth and volume of that offense. And they still put up a ton of points and had some quick strikes, momentum changes. And the kid had – there were four or five moments in that game where you just were like, holy bleep, what a throw.
Yes.
And that's only – he's only going to grow from there. Now, he's going to throw some picks, and he got away with a couple things, but this new version of Andy Reid is fine with that. And you know, this is sort of the opposite of the way Alex Smith was coached most of the time he was there, which was just don't turn it over. And frankly, they can't play that way anymore because their defense is god-awful. And they gave up 500-odd yards, and if this was anybody they were playing other than the Chargers, they probably still lose that game even with Mahomes because – you know, San Diego misses field goals. San Diego gives up return touchdowns. I said San Diego twice. The L.A. Chargers, you know, Rivers right. had one inopportunistic pick. They had about five balls go off guys' hands that should have been caught. But that's Chargers football. And kudos to Mahomes and the Chiefs for taking advantage. But, no, Mahomes has limitless potential.
Wow. Well, can I ask about one guy who was even more astonishing than Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, on the same team? I mean, this is... What's the deal with this guy?
Yeah, I mean if you fantastic. Can't catch him, you can't tackle him, right?
No.
I mean,
it doesn't matter if he's 5'6" if you cannot reach him.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. He's so fast, so nimble, so elusive.
Wow.
And clearly he has instant chemistry with the new quarterback.
Yes.
But I don't know that he'll be the feature guy every week, but he doesn't. I mean, he shouldn't have to be there. I mean, I'm not a Sammy Watkins guy at all, but with that tight end and with Hill, Watkins should at least be a quality complementary part. And, you know, they had the AFC's leading rusher last year, Kareem Hunt. He didn't have to do a hawk of a lot either because Mahomes was throwing for all the touchdowns.
That's really, that was very impressive against a team that's supposed to be pretty good. I must ask you this. It's possible that Buffalo is that bad, but they were a playoff team last year. Is Baltimore that good? Is Flacco, is everything set?
Baltimore's better, but everybody who faces Buffalo has to be graded on a curve because
well, they made the playoffs.
Different team, doesn't matter. Different quarterback, different offensive line.
Okay.
Buffalo stinks. Buffalo will have a hard time winning three games. I mean, Buffalo plays Indianapolis week 7, and I thought that was their first chance to win a game.
Right.
But having watched Andrew Luck last week, they're not going to win that game. I don't know when Buffalo could go into the second half of the season still looking for a win. They are that bad.
They were a playoff team.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, in a terrible AFC, and they were, 25th on total offense and 27th on total defense.
Right.
And they had a 15-way tiebreaker go their way at the end of the season. And, you know, they got lucky at the roulette table. They even know they weren't that good. But they don't have players right now, Tony. That roster is bad. And, again, I thought they'd struggle to win three or four games. And that will be the case. But, yeah, Baltimore's better. Flacco looks as spry and healthy as we've seen him in years. And he's obviously motivated and playing for
his
ability
job.
To continue.
That's right.
Yeah, to continue being a $25 million a year quarterback. They've got some young pass rushers who I think are finally ready to complement Suggs and give them a little more bite to their defense. And the secondary's deep. I mean, their best corner, Jimmy Smith, is suspended, didn't even play. And he'll come back week five. So we'll see. Short week against Cincinnati. The Bengals should have lost to the Colts. The Bengals look like a disaster to me. The Bengals may run out of players this year because they seem to be the one team in the league that maybe didn't show up for their meeting with the officials before the year.
Yeah, they're going to talk
about the head-to-head, and guys getting ejected. Somehow Marvin Lewis, I guess he didn't post that stuff in their locker room because they're as dirty as ever.
Yeah. All right, we'll get you out of here. Plug your podcast for us.
Well, Tim, we're going to do the beam. Oh, he's going crazy already. He's going crazy already. Hold down, Copper. Down. Honey, he ain't doing nothing to you. We're going to do the pod this week on Friday, Tim, while I run away from this dog. We're going to wait till the Ravens play them Bengals on Thursday night, and then we'll break it down for you, hon, at the Be More Opinionated podcast. Catch us on the iTunes.
Thank you, Jason.
Hey, you got it, buddy. Talk to you next week.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. He goes into the accent. The dog goes insane.
I love
dog
that. Goes nuts.
It's really wonderful. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, Nigel will do the news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron ad. Blue Apron back with us. That makes me happy. Blue Apron delivers farm-fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standard for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. You choose chef-designed recipes. We deliver, we meaning Blue Apron, deliver fresh, seasonally inspired ingredients and cook incredible meals in as little as 20 minutes. Wow, they're down to 20.
20
I
minutes.
I think you got to figure 40 to 45, but they're down to 20 minutes. Quick and easy recipe options with insanely delicious flavors, perfectly portioned ingredients delivered right to your door. Skip meal planning and shopping and get straight to cooking with Blue Apron. Whether you're looking for quick and easy meals or a full culinary cooking experience, Blue Apron lets you choose from a range of recipe options. September partnerships include Bob's Burgers inspired and Whole 30 approved. So check out this week's menu. You can get your first three meals free. That's good. That's free. At blueapron.com/TonyK. That's blueapron.com/TonyK to get your first three meals free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a Tony Memel song sent to us by Barb Brandt. This is The Good Land.
That's right.
This is The Good Land, and this is going to be the theme song for the cable travel show Discover Wisconsin. The other songs from the album will be on the radio. We mentioned Tony Memel last week because it's a remarkable story. He's got one arm, and his second arm is fitted with a cast and a pick.
And a pick that he's taped to the cast.
Taped to the cast.
And he creates
this music, and then as an avocation, helps children with limb problems play music.
That's great.
And this is
brilliant.
Wonderful.
Wow. Yes.
It's called the Lucky Finn Project. And, so we're happy to play his songs. And they're great songs.
It's great music.
They are.
Michael, if people like Tony Memel or people who have...
I got it from here, Dad.
Yeah, go.
If you want to send us your original music, email it to the show by sending it to jingles@tonykornheiser.com. And if you're looking to buy a Tony Kornheiser Show-related shirt, or maybe you're looking for a wine stopper or a corkscrew, check out shop.tonykornheiser.com.
Good job. We're going to do news. I just want to say before the news starts, Bob Woodward's book dropped yesterday.
Mm.
There were 1 million.
How many?
1
how many?
Million,
million
pre-orders.
Oh,
1
my.
Million.
Gosh.
Bob doesn't know I do a podcast. He has absolutely no idea. He may not know what a podcast is. I love Bob Woodward. David loves Bob Woodward. Liz loves Bob Woodward.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we're taking his side.
Yeah.
We're taking his side. And
he's
when
got
someone
a track record.
When someone calls him an idiot.
A little bit of one.
When you call him an idiot and says he made it all. No.
No, I actually didn't.
No.
He didn't.
No, he doesn't. he doesn't. And so if you want to help out a starving author, go buy that book.
So Fear, it's 1 million pre-sold copies? Or 1 million sales?
1 million.
That's
1 million.
Now, really? When wow. Salty the Sea Cat is available,
yes,
that's a number we'll be shooting for.
Yeah, 1 million. Yes. So well that's done. Amazing.
Yeah, dealt with pumping irony, right?
Yeah, 1 million, sure. You have some news?
I do. Before we start the news, I just want to say a quick thanks to Catherine Keene and Lisa Roselli, who helped me. Lisa's actually an old friend of mine. They helped me over at the National Geographic Museum. I took
oh, yes,
a
you went there
tour.
Yesterday.
Yes, with Adam Ferrara's sister-in-law.
Who's a nun.
Mother Catherine.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and her friends Camilla and Monica. They all spent time over in Jerusalem.
Oh, wow.
And so for them, going to see the virtual tour of the Tomb of Christ was, they actually, one of them said, well, now I'm homesick. You know,
yeah.
And it's a spectacular thing. So thank you.
You got some memorabilia.
Yes.
You didn't steal anything from the tomb. You were actually given something.
No, Mother Catherine gave me, I don't know what, but it's basically like a wooden plaque with Mother Mary and the baby Jesus on it.
Mother Mary calls to me.
Yes.
Oh. Speaking words of wisdom.
And it's beautiful. And it's something I will cherish.
That's great.
Life. So,
yes. That's great.
So it was just fantastic. Great. Yes. And I urge everyone to go down there. It's
around the corner from where we do the PTI show.
And it was great because...
And by the way, they have a very nice cafeteria.
Yes.
Yes. National Geographic.
And when I finished up, I just wandered by PTI and ran a ride home.
And we had to have you thrown out.
I said, what are you doing? Get out.
Get this guy out of the line.
Get out. Speaking of getting out, people are fleeing the Carolinas.
This is the biggest news story.
Yes. 1.5 million people had to evacuate this lengthy stretch of coastline ahead of Hurricane Florence's potential catastrophic landfall.
Okay, so we are watching this constantly, and it is a bright red and purple blob that you see on the screen, which lulls you into thinking that that's how it will come, as a red or purple blob.
Right. But we'll be able to see it.
Everyone uses the word catastrophe.
Yeah. Yes.
Everyone is saying... this is going to land. It's going to do incredible damage inland as well as on the coast.
That's right.
Have you talked to Chan? Are they in the...
Mandatory evacuation this afternoon. So, but he claims it's just because the governor is in a heated race and is taking very conservative steps to just make sure nothing can be used against him in November.
He's not on the ocean coast.
No, he's close to the coast.
So this could be bad for him.
Yeah, but they're leaving the country. They have no clue what's going to go on.
Oh, okay. So he'll be fine. He'll come back
to
no
house.
He'll
be fine. House might not be fine.
So they are talking for purely selfish reasons, and I grant you that these are purely selfish reasons. I don't want there to be loss of life or loss of property, but the way this is being described as coming on land and stalling for days, Pinehurst...
Yeah.
Could go. Pinehurst is, they say Raleigh is going to absorb. You lived in Raleigh.
I did.
They
I
say
did.
Raleigh is going to absorb feet of water.
Yeah. And
feet
my dad
of water.
Lives in
and,
Cary.
Okay. And
now,
right.
Nearby.
And Pinehurst is an hour.
Yeah.
Further
south.
Inland, an hour.
South. Yeah.
A great golf resort. I love Pinehurst. I don't know what they've got already, but for example, Rehoboth Beach Golf Course has been closed the last 3 days with the water we've already had.
Sure.
Yeah. But that golf course is below the water line.
That's right.
Pinehurst is built into the sandhills.
So you think it will have...
I think it'll flood, and then I think the water will dissipate.
Mm.
Okay. But I'm worried about that.
You're worried about that.
And then, it's so damp here. It's so wet here. It's been so wet for so long. And now they say that here's what I hate. I hate when weather people, they show you the map, and then afterwards, they're asked for what's going to happen, and they use this line. Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on this one. Well, of course we're going to have to keep an eye on this one.
You think?
That's not... An imbecile could tell you, we're going to have to keep an eye on this
one. Exact forecast.
How about, when is the rain going to come here? How much rain is there going to be here?
I don't think they know that, Tom.
But
here, meaning your street address.
Yeah, 2015.
That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, or 19971.
Let's clarify.
Don't tell me you're going to have to keep an eye on it. We're all going to keep an eye on it. That doesn't annoy you?
No. Well, I mean, the
days away from here.
Yeah, they don't.
It's going to make landfall on Thursday, they think, but it could approach the dreaded Cat 5 level with 155 mile an hour winds.
What did they do before they had meteorology science. What did they do? You just got
the gods are angry with us.
Right, yes. Exactly.
Yes. Sacrifice.
Well, we had the oceans back then.
I think about this all the time. What happened to the first guy in a canoe at Niagara Falls? how would he know? There was no map.
Jimmy, just go ahead. Tell us what's up there.
We'll catch up.
It's getting quick here. It's getting quick.
Jimmy was a good guy. Niagara. Well, yeah, we talked about this. I think one of the tips they had was the barometer, because when the barometer would plummet, they say, "Oh, it was some bad weather's coming." But yes. I think for like the people
who invented the barometer,
you know,
Mr. and Mrs. Barometer, obviously.
Labrador retrievers know.
They do.
Yes.
Oh, they sense barometric pressure.
Yeah, animals know.
Yeah. My dog always knew when the thunder was coming, before I did.
But I think like there was that horrible hurricane down in Galveston in the 30s or something like that. I imagine that most people were like, "Oh, it looks like it's going to rain."
No, I don't know.
You have no idea that it's going to be that fierce.
By the way, we are now living in Washington, D.C. We're now living in Houston.
Yeah.
It's tremendously hot and rainy all the time.
Yeah.
That's where we live now. So what else you got?
Mr. Tony, if you like the Subway sandwich for $5.
I do.
It may no longer be available to
you. This is big news. I saw this on the news today.
Now, this originated in March of 2008 in the height of the recession.
Oh, yes.
And this was a great idea that they had. They said, you know what? We're just going to chop a little bit of price off it and market this.
$5 footlong.
$5 footlong generated $3.8 billion in nationwide sales. It's billion with a B by the end of August 2009. However, local franchises have been complaining that the $5 footlong doesn't allow them to be profitable. So Subway upper management has said...
Now, they're all franchised places. Oh. Yes. Now, like Subway doesn't own them.
Right.
Right. But the CEO, Trevor Haynes, said that they're not going to require each franchise to honor this anymore. So it'll be up to individual stores whether they carry this or not.
So we may be, depending on where you shop, you may be losing the $5 footlong.
Yes.
So that's a big deal.
Do you still have money left on the Subway card?
I still have money left from years.
Good. Have you noticed a change in the way they prepare their sandwiches? It used to be piled high with fresh, crisp vegetables. And now it's just a sad version of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it across all outlets or just the one you go to?
So I will be honest, I only go to one or two because it's sort of a last resort meal for me. But I have every Subway sandwich I've had in the last 5 years, I've experienced this issue.
I get the same sandwich every time I go to Subway.
And they count I get the each hot slice chicken. Of meat and they cheese they put on.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So you think they're getting tight?
They wait.
I think they've been tight.
Okay.
Well, I don't have this story in front of me, but I know the basic details of it. It's talking about, you know, they count the slices of meat. There's a woman who worked at the deli counter of a supermarket, I think in somewhere in the Pennsylvania area. And for 8 years, she helped herself to 3 to 5 slices of ham. And now, like, the Lost Prevention people have calculated what that is, and she is facing possible felony charges.
That's ridiculous. You're slicing the meat.
Right.
There you go. But they give away the sample.
And as they said,
one for you, one for me. What's wrong with that?
And as they said, they're like, and she also had salami on occasion. As if that was sinister. I'm like,
terrible job. I'm more concerned about her cholesterol.
It's a terrible job. Let her eat.
Yes.
What else?
Former White House aide Omarosa is making the rounds again. She was on The View on Monday morning to speculate as to who wrote the anonymous op-ed. Or am I pronouncing that correctly? Is it anonymous?
Anonymous. It's an anonymous op-ed.
Yes.
It's an anonymous editorial, as it was first referred to.
Anonymous editorial. Anonymous. Thank you very much. She's claiming that it was the vice president's chief of staff. Which,
can I ask a serious question here?
I think it's Amy
Why does anyone listen to anything that woman says?
It's a very good question.
Why?
I'm not
she
sure.
has no credibility, none.
No.
None. Am I wrong on this?
No, Tom.
Right, Liz? She has none.
I agree with you, but I think that definition extends to a lot of people that have been brought into this White House and have already left or, may still be there.
Yes.
I mean, there's just a lot of kind of head-scratching people in positions of power that maybe not be in their subject matter expertise.
What else do we have?
Peyton Manning, apparently.
Everyone wants him to run for something in Tennessee, and he says, I don't want to run.
Yeah, retiring
I don't want to run.
Representative Jimmy Duncan told TMZ that I love Peyton Manning. In fact, if Peyton Manning ran for any office in Tennessee, he would win by a landslide.
No, he doesn't want to do it. He's
too busy playing golf.
Yeah, exactly. He plays a lot of golf.
Yeah.
He's going to be the NFL commissioner.
Yeah, he said last September.
So? I do.
Wow.
I do.
Really?
I do.
Huh.
I think he's the next one. I think so.
He said last September, he said, look, I certainly have an interest in politics and in our country. I just have zero interest in being a politician.
So let me say that. I've said this before about Peyton Manning. And did you spend any time with Peyton Manning?
Oh, I covered him. I mean, you know, I covered a lot of games that he played in.
I did not. No.
Okay. I have never met an athlete who can sense the room as quickly and as well as Peyton Manning. I'm not saying he's the smartest guy who ever lived.
Yeah.
I'm saying that he has a feel for what's going to work right then and there better than any athlete I've ever met.
Wow.
So that if you want to be something in the public eye,
that's
a great gift to have.
It sure is.
Yeah, it doesn't help you much on research and development, you know, but if you're in the public eye, the ability to get that quickly.
Yeah.
You said Peyton, not Pete Rose?
Not Pete Rose. Not Pete Rose.
I have one final story for you. We're going to take you to Fort Edward, New York. I'm not sure where Fort Edward is.
Nor am I.
That's got to be upstate, right?
Well, I would know it if it was downstate.
Yes.
Yeah.
73-year-old Dale Ferrand went into a Cumberland Farms, and he said, you know what? I'm going to buy a Slim Jim for my dog, Boots. Not Bootsy, Boots.
Slim Jim.
Boots loves Slim Jim.
Step into a Slim Jim.
Yes. Sure. Says, you know what? I'm going to buy a $30 scratch-off ticket at the same time. Turns out
I'm
going to
scratch it off with the Slim Jim.
With the Slim Jim, $10 million. Yes.
Wow.
Walks away with $6.7 million after required withholdings. So big thanks to Boots. I hope Boots is getting a lifetime supply of Slim Jims.
Slim Jims will kill a dog eventually. I mean, they'll kill humans, and they'll take paint off. They'll kill a dog. All right, let's get out of here. Old Guy Radio when we return?
Yes, a great Frank story.
Good. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Yay.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Spotify ad, and I concede this is my favorite ad because it's very brief and it's to the point.
Okay.
It doesn't require me to talk about do-it-yourself projects or anything like that. Did you know that every single episode of the Tony Kornheiser Show is now on Spotify? Yes, the same app that has millions of songs now has thousands of podcasts. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite shows, like this one, and discover new ones, just not too many because we get jealous very easily. To subscribe to our show, search for The Tony Kornheiser Show. Tap follow, F-O-L-L-O-W, and you get every new episode delivered to you. Podcasts on Spotify, they're streaming right now, and now, and now.
This is The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day.
And now...
This is Frank.
The end.
Michael's very lucky. He has FS on his license plates for Frank Sinatra. This is written by Paul Anka.
Yes.
Why are we doing this song?
Don't know.
Let me tell you a little story.
Ask Jillian. Somebody ask Jillian. Or Dean. Joey.
Let me tell you a story about Francis Albert Sinatra.
Please. Chairman of the board.
On this date in 1967, Frank was playing at the Sands Casino in Vegas, and he got into a fight when he is denied credit as part of a policy put in place by the new owners of the Sands. In the fight, Sinatra breaks two teeth and then takes his talents and his money over to Caesar's Palace.
I'm sorry, his own teeth or someone else's teeth?
His own teeth,
okay,
yes.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
But somebody will pay for that.
Somebody. There'll be an accounting for that. Because as I found out in the when I was researching The Origins of My Way, as you said, was written by Paul Anka, based on a French pop song called Comme d'habitude by Claude Francois.
Sure.
And
the late great.
The late great. So Anka was in Florida having dinner with Sinatra, and I love how they say this, and a couple of mob guys, during which Sinatra said, I'm quitting the business, I'm sick of it, I'm getting the hell out. Then back in New York, Anka rewrites this tune and says, well, this is for Frank. Anka's record company says, why are you writing a song for Frank? You should sing it. He's like, look at the lyrics. This is for Sinatra.
Right.
Sinatra sings, it becomes a big hit. Later in life, though, he said, I guess his... his daughter Tina said he hated it. He said he didn't like it.
Really?
The song stuck, and he couldn't get it off his shoe. He always thought that the song was self-serving and self-indulgent,
wow.
which I suppose it is a bit.
By the way, I don't usually do this. I had an idea in my head. Okay. I think it was my idea. I don't know that I heard it on television or radio. I think it was my idea.
Mm-hmm.
Seven new NFL coaches this year. All
yes.
seven lost.
Yes, 0-7. That's right.
Okay. Indianapolis, oh, Frank Reich at home loses.
Right.
Matt Patricia last night
right.
at home in Detroit gives up 48.
Right.
Oakland at home, Gruden loses.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee, Mike Vrabel loses on the road.
Right.
Giants, Pat Shurmur loses at home.
Right.
The Arizona guy, I don't even know his name. Loses in
yes,
Arizona
yes.
to the Redskins, and Nagy loses on the road in Green Bay for Chicago. So
seven.
you want to change coaches? You think that's a good idea? Maybe it's not that good an idea.
Well.
Maybe Dusty Baker, maybe, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
David, you have an announcement for people.
Yeah.
What's my... Oh, about
yes.
the thing?
Yes, David.
About the thing.
Well, they know about it. People pay attention. I'm doing the Athletic. Everybody knows that now. It's been 24 hours.
Do you really think everybody knows?
Everybody knows that because
they always go out on Wisconsin
Avenue. Pay attention to everything in my life.
That, yeah. So you're going to be, you're
gonna be
leaving
the,
Turner.
Yes, I'm going to be editor-in-chief of the Athletic DC.
And that is what?
It is a website. It's a sports website. It is a a company that has over the last 2 years launched in, I believe it's 38 cities in the United States and Canada. They are, I guess you would say, hyper-local. That's the word that people use now. And they cover sports in these towns. And they hire people to come in and cover a lot of sports, including hockey, which is very big for us. It's a big driver of traffic. A lot of hockey communities feel underserved in the cities that they live in and that they support. And so we're very
hockey
lucky.
Oriented.
Well, we're very lucky.
And you got
that,
the Stanley Cup winner right
that
here.
That the Capitals, won the whole thing last year.
Come into chatter, see the Braden Holtby stick that may have turned away
yes.
the shot in game two that
may or may
changed
not have. Who knows?
The
may
course
have. May have.
Of the Stanley Cup finals. So will you write every day? What are you
I won't write every day. I'm writing I will have a column.
Oh,
so,
you will?
Yeah.
Oh,
so I'll yak about
Good
things that I don't know.
Will it have a name or will just have your name?
The column?
You know, in the old days, columns
no,
had names.
No.
Like
not,
Dick Young's column was Clubhouse Confidential.
I'm not going to do This Morning with David Aldridge. No,
well, you can't. That's Shirley.
I know. I'm just saying. It's not going to have a name. It's
How about Later name. This Morning?
Yeah. All right.
How about When I Get There?
I'm so glad.
That's good.
I'm so You're glad good. Both of you were here because yesterday we spent a lot of time with Chris and with Gary on Serena Williams.
Oh,
all
yes.
of that.
Yes.
And Liz, you wrote a very big story about that. And you know her
Thank
and you have
you.
Covered her. And I wonder, and my views are known, and I wonder what you felt about the totality of that
mm-hmm.
and how it affected the match and
mm-hmm.
what happens next. Because
mm-hmm.
I will say that the tennis can be done without humans. All the calls. There are no judgment calls in tennis. You're either over the line or you're not over. This is not basketball
right.
or football.
Not block charge.
It's not. You don't need humans at all
in
tennis.
I would take issue with that.
Go
but
ahead.
I get like 90% of your point, and that's not a good place to start, I don't think. So let me say at the outset, forgive me. You just like make motions if I'm going on too long.
Mm-hmm.
This is a multi-layered, very complex athlete and issue and ramifications and terrain. It doesn't fit into sound bites. It's and it's easy to take one side or the other and just scream over what happened. And I see it many different ways. But I do want to say, the only victim here was Naomi Osaka, who played brilliantly. She beat Serena 6-6.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, she kept her composure remarkably through the meltdown.
20 years old.
Yeah.
20.
So
not 25.
Such a well-deserved 20. First slam for her, and she'll never get that moment back. And right. it was heartrending to watch her feel guilty, not understand what the booze meant, to cry. We all saw that. That was just completely appalling. Next, I certainly would not defend anything Serena about her behavior during the match. I don't know that any player would. It was so over the line.
And not an isolated incident. Not something that's never happened before.
No, and I covered her two previous meltdowns at the U.S. Open in either a semifinal or a final when she was losing. I mean, it's such a similar fact pattern set off by different things. But the one in 2009 that cost her a record fine, I have never seen anything like it when she was, you know, threatening to shove or saying she wanted to shove the ball down the line on umpire's throat. So that said, the chair umpire had other options. He could have handled it better, I think. There were three calls in succession that led to the loss of the game that was so critical. The first and the third calls were judgment calls, and that is where I would say to you, I think there is a human, you know, not everything can be machine done. The coaching call, very confusing to a lot of people. The violation is that the coach is coaching. It's not that the player receives the message or acts on the message. So it is the coach acknowledged, yeah, I was coaching. Everybody coaches.
Very good interview in the moment by Pam Shriver. Yes.
Excellent.
He said, I do it. We all do it every point.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Really?
He was honest and she was directed. It was like, that was handled. It matters not if Serena noticed or saw. The penalty is coaching.
But it's on her.
Yeah, the player.
She absorbs.
Exactly.
Yes. I'm not sure how fair that
commits,
is.
That's another question. Yeah. So the coach commits the infraction. The player pays for it. But her reaction that I'm not cheating. You're calling me a cheater. I demand an apology. She knows that's not the nature of the infraction. It's that your coach is cheating. But I mean, that's a fine point. But anyway, so that's a bit of a judgment call in that everybody does it. Why did he call it at that moment on her coach? No dispute about the racket abuse. She obliterated it. Epic fashion. Boom. So she knows, anybody who knows tennis knows, she's at level two. Yeah. You know, you're one infraction away from losing a game. She could not afford to lose a point, much less a game. So you walk it, you stop it at that point as a player. You don't let it escalate. And then when she got upset again, she returned to the first issue, raging, and she's called for verbal abuse.
She loses the whole
game. So that's
game.
What, well, yeah, mm-hmm. but she, it was no surprise. I mean, when you have one warning, one infraction, you know what comes next. Mm-hmm. There's no shock in that. The shock is, did that amount to verbal abuse? So in the rule book, verbal abuse, there's no like George Carlin list
words.
There is
subjective.
No list of words.
That's subjective.
So what is verbal abuse? Is it persistent badgering of the guy and not letting an issue die, not moving on? I don't think even the umpire would have said it's the word thief that's so explosive. I think it was the totality of her badgering, haranguing, not letting it go, which is in that venue, inciting the crowd, delaying the match. And I think consciously or subconsciously, you could ask, was there an element here of, I'm just going to do whatever it takes to stop the momentum, to break the momentum. I'm losing this match. And this disruption is going to get to this 20-year-old. You don't want a 20-year-old on the brink of this unbelievable moment to stop.
So you think there's a calculation in this?
No, I'm saying whether subconsciously or not.
Okay.
I think you have to wonder, you know, because it would have that effect. You know, whether it's, and players do it all the time to stop the momentum when they're out of options. Whether it's injury timeout, I have asthma, I need a bathroom break. All these things are gamesmanship.
Right.
I shouldn't say all. There are real injuries. Mm-hmm. But that's among the tools you go to when all else fails. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm running out of words. So no excuse for her behavior. No surprise that she found herself on the precipice of the ultimate penalty and she got it. Well, I shouldn't say ultimate, lost the game. So I think that was really in her control. That said, the chair could have handled it better. So where I defend Serena is, I mean, I do think she showed her best face in the disastrous medal ceremony, you know, trying to quiet the crowd, asking for quiet, asking to stop. But I think at the same time, she raises a legitimate question. She raises two legitimate questions in the aftermath. One, the rule book that is not specific is widely violated on a couple instances, capriciously applied. So that is going to make some players feel victimized. The foot fault thing is rarely called. Verbal abuse, what is that? What constitutes that? Time violations are rarely called. So there's a problem with the rule book. And if you can't distill it to clarity and actually enforce it, the sport runs the risk of people feeling victimized.
I would tell you that verbal abuse is impossible if you don't have anybody in the chair, if you just have electronics.
Oh, I see your point.
No verbal abuse. But Serena also wrapped herself in the gender issue.
Yes,
which
I
thought was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, technically.
Yes.
Yeah, I could see your point. But I also think, so I've covered tennis 14 years or more. This issue never occurred to me that she raised about a double standard for women. Mm. But once she put it on the table, I was like, oh, of course. Oh, yes. I mean, I get it. And I can see why a lot of people don't, certainly men. But to me, it speaks, what she's talking about is the latitude that male players have to rage, whether it's cuss or rage or disrupt, is much broader than women have. And there's no denying that. And tennis, even, at least when I grew up loving tennis, you know, very tail end of Connors, I love Nastasi, there's, you know, McEnroe, there's, the list is longer. But tennis overtly, consciously, deliberately marketed and celebrated its bad boys. It's like the bad boys. And Agassi was a rebel. I mean, that was just
awesome. So why can't there be a bad girl?
Throughout, you can't even, you're not supposed to be women or girls. You're supposed to be this like weird category of ladies.
Yes.
And wear this almost like childlike Lolita, virginal white little dresses. I mean, there's... These are subtle things that it's just, you don't stop and think about, but it is part of the tradition of tennis. Women are ladies, and you don't, there's just, and it's not even that different from a presidential debate when you have a female candidate. Her latitude for being forceful, emphatic, and attacking her opponent,
far smaller.
It is a tightrope.
That's right.
Too much and you're a bee. Too soft, you're going to cry in a crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is any woman who goes to work, dresses in the morning, you put on a suit if you're a man. As a woman, every day is anguish. Like, I want to look smart and contemporary. Is my dress too short? Is it too long? Is it too tight? Am I going to get comments about this? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just women in so many contexts walk a fine line in these rules set by men.
So that has all come to everyone's attention. And by and large, people say, yes, there is a double standard there and this should stop. I have a couple of questions. One, Carlos Ramos, I think he's done in the United States of America. I don't think you'll see him in a chair again. And I don't think you will ever, ever see a man in the finals of the U.S. Open women's in the chair. I don't think you'll see it ever.
I kind of hate hearing both, you know, because he is a longtime respected chair umpire. And I have to believe that, I mean, he didn't break any rule. He just chose to apply things very rigidly and not explain himself and not extend the
curtain. There was a haughtiness. There was a haughtiness to the way he
No,
behaved.
I agree. But it's not like there's some clear-cut thing he can never officiate again.
Well, okay.
But no, you're smarter about
I don't know.
What way the winds blow than I. I would not take any joy or feel it a victory if a man never chairs a female match, just because, I mean,
By the way, Serena would have said the same things to a woman in the chair, because we've seen her do that.
Yeah. The meltdown with the foot fault call, a woman was in the chair, and one of them, she's like, and you're ugly inside. I mean, she like, right. There was, the list was long of the way she went at that, the woman in the chair. I think female chair umpires should umpire men's matches.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did in the final. But
yeah,
I don't,
there's precedent for that. So I don't see why you walk this back and say, well, a man can never.
I think you're going to. I think they
you
will.
You may. Well, that's where I defer to you. Yeah. You see these things play out better than I.
It's just lovely to hear you.
Yeah, I don't
missed
know.
You. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the end of the show, right?
That's right.
A jingle and some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you folks.
Kirsten.
Yeah, just the best.
Unmistakable voice.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me thank Jason Lockenfor of CBS Sports for coming on with us today. Let me thank our sponsors, Spotify, Lowe's, and Blue Apron. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review from Shad, a haiku for weathermen, hurricanes, flooding, Kip Sheeman, we need you now. Lives depend on it.
Yes.
From Dylan Sugar, being a Raleigh little, I was somewhat disheartened here on Monday's podcast that Raleigh would no longer exist after Friday. While the positives of total destruction include no longer having to deal with the worsening Raleigh traffic and an almost assured drop in the unbearable humidity, I would rather not have my worldly possessions destroyed by something named Florence. Also, Raleigh being wiped off the map would undoubtedly interfere with my weekend golf plans. On a serious note, as of Monday at noon, grocery stores throughout the area have already run out of water and bread.
Wow.
If you have any of these supplies in the prize closet, I would greatly appreciate if you could mail them to me as soon as possible. You said you have friends.
Oh, yeah. I have a friend on Emerald Island.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's just, she said it's chaos down there. So, no, the ATM machines are out of money, no dry goods, no bottled water, and everyone is frantically trying to board up the houses, and because everyone has to leave. It's just chaos.
When you are a government official and you use the word catastrophic, you don't do that. This is not a whimsical thing that you do.
No.
This is a serious, we have the science, and this is what it is. Tim Crean, Fort Collins, Colorado. I don't always eat M&Ms in the same color order, but I always eat the broken ones first, the Siamese ones, the connected ones next, and then always eat one color first, choosing the color pretty much at random. Worse than that, whenever I have a bag of chips, I always eat the ones that are folded over onto themselves first. I do this to such a degree that if she is related to me by marriage, finds a chip folded over, she just puts it on my plate and moves on. The OCD quality of me and all the people listening makes me happy.
Fascinating.
From Dr. Matt Johnson, I'm a Sooner living in Austin, and feel free to talk about Texas losing to Maryland as much as you like.
Sure.
Now that we don't have Big Game Bob for you to hate anymore, Lincoln Riley has a fantastic balding Jordan Spieth look. He could use help cultivating the hashtag join the covered bandwagon. From Michael Hennin in Nashville, Tennessee, I think we all know where the floor is with Nathan Peterman. Wouldn't you say he has the highest ceiling of any quarterback in NFL history?
Yes. Can
Where
only
they
go up.
Get this? What are they doing with this guy? From John Tagliarini, or Tagliarini, in Des Moines, Iowa. I know a guy who went to the wedding of his wife's cousin, and the bride's father hated the groom so much, he canceled the caterer 48 hours before and spent the reception outside in his car drinking Alan Bubis style. From Tom Dorr in Chicago, Illinois, after hearing Saliza played squash for the first time this past weekend and is now thinking of leaving your program to become a professional squash player, I have formed a professional squash league. The top four ranked players are my 5-year-old daughter, 3-year-old daughter, my mother-in-law, and Saliza in that order. I'm doing this because I'm a frequent emailer to your show. I take time out of my day to compose and send messages to a bald orange man in hopes that he may read it on a podcast and get a laugh, which should tell you a lot about my days. On days that Saliza is in studio, the opportunity to have an email read is cut by about 40% because he makes so many comments. So Saliza is invited to join my squash league because he can't stop the yammering. Stop the yammering. It's just wonderful. From Jolene Wojcik, who we know very well from Nebraska.
Yes.
I'm sure you will get many emails from the Littles about David's new gig, but I hope you read mine. As a big fan of the NBA, I will certainly miss David on the TNT broadcast. Like you, we always hollered at the television when they showed him, hey, I know him. Although we often had to put up with asking Greg Popovich, and I add parenthetically, He's just a bad guy, even though David defends him. A question at the end of his third quarter. His interview with Barack Obama has to be the highlight and one of his best interviews. Yes. Despite all of this, I'm not surprised he's leaving. As a regular reader of his Monday NBA Notes column, I've always felt that words are his wheelhouse and he should be spending more time there. A perfect example is his column telling us of his job change. Wonderful storytelling. He has also been kind enough to humor my many Bulls and Doug McDermott questions, as I'm a fan of both. I've never been in Jingle Fest, but all the littles I talk to say David is just so nice to everyone during that event. So congrats to one of the best in the business. Looking forward to this great new chapter for him. And I think this means he'll have more time to promote Chatter. Well, I sincerely hope so.
Absolutely.
Steve the Sycophant. I'm sorry to let you down, but I can't give you my beloved Winchester 16-gauge shotgun. I forgot it was appropriated by my middle son. Since he also has his great-grandmother's deer rifle, all I have left is my wife's .38-caliber revolver. She was, I proudly note, the first woman security officer at both the Department of Labor and later the United States Information Agency before retiring and becoming a successful artist. So, dear Toby, just have Lowe's give you a full set of gunmetal ratchet wrenches. Put them by your bed, and if an intruder appears, throw those 3 degree suckers at him till he flees. Keep on potting. If you're out of your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Can I ask a practical question?
Sure. Yes.
Are we doing Stonehenge?
No!
No! Thank you!
Don't ever let nobody treat you unkind. Life's too short for you to waste your time. There's a thousand different ways for you to get back home. Don't ever forget that you're never alone. Just push on and on. Always find strength in your song. Just push on and on. Sing out loud and sing out strong. Well, I knew this time would come, but it still seems hard to send you on your way. You're gonna go far. There's a big old world waiting for you to change. All the twists and turns just stay the same. And push on and on. Always find strength in your song. Just push on and on. Sing out loud and sing out strong. Just push on and on. Always find strength in your song. Just push on. There's one last thing that I need to say. Just a few words and I'll be on my way. Thank you for the love and the joy you bring. You brighten the world every time you sing. Just push on and on. Always find strength in your song. Just push on and on. Sing out loud and sing out. Push on and on. Always find strength in your song. Just push on and on. Sing out loud and sing out strong. Sing out loud and sing out strong. Sing out loud and sing out strong.
See the climbing walls. Who seen it all.
Who raised their voices? The ones that sing the song. Windows down, let's take a ride. Blow my hair back dry. Heartland's beating, it's a lie. The good land's great tonight. I am unending, an ode to taking the back roads, and those who've got a dream they're chasing, whose minds will lack the wind and hearts are trailblazing.
Raise your voice.